men were unanimously regarded as outstanding poets: Thornton Wilder, Stephen Vincent Benet, and Harry. So you will understand that when the shy, soft-spoken, sincere young gentleman went looking for backers for his new literary project, the prospective investors were unimpressed. For example, Harry approached the former Yale professor William Lyon Phelps, who advised it would be impossible to make a financial success of the venture. Then Harry somehow got in to see the renowned editor and critic H.L. Mencken, who listened quietly to a description of Harry's folly and then concluded it'll never work, nobody will read it. Harry even managed to meet with newspaper magnate William Randolph Hearst, offering him a percentage of the profits in exchange for financial assistance, but Hearst declared that he was not interested. So, it appeared the young poet would have to abandon his dream. And then Harry recalled the mother of a former classmate, a Mrs. William L. Harkness of Cleveland, Ohio. And she was interested in investments in the stock market in particular. Well, this was not exactly the stock market, but on the chance that Harry's literary project might intrigue Mrs. Harkness, he arranged to visit with her. And there in her living room, the young man made the pitch of a lifetime. The reasons his venture was important, the reasons that it would sell, and finally Mrs. Harkness raised her hand. "That'll do," she said. "That'll do. You may put me down for $20,000. Well, Harry was flabbergasted. Other investors, the few he had found, had agreed to nickels and dimes by comparison. $20,000 in those days was an astounding figure in any context. But Harry did not question his good fortune. He eagerly accepted Mrs. Harkness' offer, and he launched his literary project, and he made publishing history. For Harry's folly, the idea in which at one time only he believed was a weekly reprint of the past week's news under topical headings, a magazine scoffed at by the biggest names in journalism. Of course, you know the risky publishing venture of Harry Henry Luce as Time Magazine. But you still don't quite know the rest of the story. For you see, the Time Magazine investor who made the difference back in 1923, Mrs. Harkness of Cleveland, was hard of hearing. Profoundly hard of hearing. But her pride was such that she did not tell Harry. What I'm saying is that she knew he wanted her to invest money in something. But she did not know what the investment was about. She hadn't the slightest idea. As a matter of fact, 6 years later, dear Mrs. Harkness would lose practically everything in the Wall Street crash. But she was supported in her old age by her investment in Time Magazine. And all because once upon a time she sat in her living room with a sweet, sincere-looking young man. Without hearing a word that he said, she trusted what she saw in his eyes. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab, the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. We're to chat about the new nonsense and lawsuits over the Oceano Dunes. Will this story ever go away? Doesn't seem like anything ever goes away in this county, does it, Greg?
No. The only thing that goes away is people's money. It goes away to the lawyers. To the lawyers' pockets.
Yeah, no kidding. And that's an interesting organization that we're going up against, right. And we'll talk about that. We're going to unpack Measure H, which is the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments sales tax increase, and this is going to be on the November ballot, and you're going to want to know about it and what it's going to do to you. And then we're going to talk about other Slo County issues and news to watch as we enjoy the Mid-State Fair and the summer. So again, welcome back, Greg.
Well, thank you, Barry. Always glad to be here.
It's good to have you. You folks, you can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So in your last newsletter, Greg, you kicked off with reflections on Slo County from your perch of as executive director of CoLab after a year. You captured most of my thoughts, and I would call it, it was a bit melancholy, the message, I would say.
Well, I didn't mean it to be melancholy, but, you know, we're celebrating our 250th birthday of our nation, and it just seemed like a good time to reflect on what we were dealing with locally, and we have some big challenges, but we have a lot of blessings, too, and I tried to make sure that, you know, I think there's a good balance of sort of the nasties and the greatness.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing, I mean, you kick it off by talking about that our biggest factor that shapes our lives is the high cost of living.
Yes.
And how it impacts our jobs and services and so on and so forth. I mean, the first thing I thought about, and we've talked about this before, is this philosophy in California of creating false scarcity.
Yeah, that's a concept that I think is born out of liberalism. The more scarce something is, the easier it is and the more profitable it is to regulate and tax and restrict. And so we have shortages in a lot of things. We have shortages in energy. Your last half hour was all about nuclear energy, but we have our liberal legislature is trying to run out all of the fuel refineries, for example, creating a shortage. The more short we are on fuel, the easier it is for the scoundrels to regulate it and tax it and restrict it.
Right. And again, and that kind of also, this goes hand in hand in this county with the whole NIMBY. Not my backyard attitude.
Well, and I think NIMBYism is alive and well in San Luis Obispo County.
It's flourishing in San Luis Obispo County.
In some ways, you can't blame people. They came here because it's truly a little slice of paradise, and it's beautiful, and nobody wants great big huge housing projects. Nobody wants these tall instant tenement housing kind of, 10-story apartment buildings and that kind of stuff. But a lot of people are talking about housing. Some of our elected officials even, they talk about housing on and on and on, but they never do anything to make it any easier. And sometimes I think it's sort of a false flag kind of a thing.
Yeah. And it's at some level, I mean, yeah, it's we just went through this, and I won't mention any specific projects, but we just we've had a couple of housing projects, one in this count up in North County and one in South County that, have languished.
Yes.
To get some reasonable new housing built here.
Well, and so the question is, do people that already have their own home here really want new housing, or would they rather newcomers just go somewhere else? And the problem is that we rely on so many people within the lower income stratus of our economy, service workers, whether it's, the waitress at the coffee shop you go to, whether it's somebody, that's doing minor construction work or simple maintenance kinds of things. And they don't have the ability to live often on the wages that they make. And so their employers have to pay more, and so we end up paying the price for that. It costs you $25-$30 to get a bacon and eggs breakfast anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the other big factor, and I mean, we talk about it a lot here on PWM, is that the cost of government is such a huge factor in our cost of living here.
It's enormous. And, our county now has implemented this new policy where they're getting a full cost recovery on almost every service that you ask of the county. So you go in for a dog license or a building permit or a permit to drill a well, whatever it is, they're going to charge you whatever it costs them to give you that permit. Mm-hmm. And so it begs the question, well, wait a minute, what about all those taxes I pay? What are they paying for? And I've got one answer for you that's very fresh. Today, the Board of Supervisors voted to fund the last stretch of the Bob Jones Trail. And that last stretch is going to cost between $10 and $15 million. It's 1 mile long. So the total trail is 4 miles, and it's going to cost between $40 and $45 million for a 4 mile trail. And that's where your taxes are going.
Right.
And it's just outrageous. And nobody raises an eyebrow. Nobody says, wait a minute, why does it cost over $10 million a mile for a bike path? But that's what's happening.
So this total thing has been close to $50 million.
Well, I think in the end it probably will be. And no one's even asking how much it's going to cost to maintain the trail. Nobody's asking about liability costs, that kind of thing. It's just this tremendous gem in their crown for these supervisors that think it's a wonderful thing that people are going to go out and be able to, you know, pedal along on a $10 million a mile trail.
What was the vote on the board?
It was 4-0. Supervisor Pichong abstained. He has a relationship with the gentleman who the board tried to get his property from. I think his name's Burnell, down in South County. And so John abstained. But
Heather voted for this?
Heather voted for it.
And what was her rationale?
Well, I don't think she gave a rationale. I think, you know, Heather has to choose her battles. This was a 3 votes. And so, if she'd voted no, it wouldn't have made any difference. I guess it would have been a philosophical stand, but... I don't know, maybe she's a cyclist in the closet or something.
Well, and I mean, we were going to talk about this more in a minute, but we won't now. But still, this project, it's been rationalized by the Board of Supervisors, I believe, because they say, well, it's all coming from grant money from the state.
Yeah, as if grant money just... appeared from heaven or something like that.
It's still OPM.
It is other people's money. It is tax money. And could it and should it be going to a higher and better use?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least should somebody be riding herd on this project and saying, wait a minute, $10 million a mile is ridiculous. We should do cost cutting. We should make it, maybe a little more modest. But why should taxpayers put out that kind of money? You know, there's probably, I'm guessing, 5%, if that, of taxpayers that go use bicycle paths. And so the other 95% or more are funding the bill for it.
Well, and the other thing that jumped out of your report on this was the fact that a huge amount of this money that's being spent goes to consultants.
Yes.
The consultancy class.
Yeah. I don't know how much of it was, the county only has so many professional engineers on staff. And when they need an engineer that has an expertise, they usually have to go out and use them as a consultant. And so I don't know how much of it is that versus how much of it is just somebody's buddy who offers a few opinions and sends in a big bill.
Well, as you said, it was going to pass regardless.
Yeah.
But it's what another disappointment, because as you point out in your preamble to the newsletter, is that big government is not a productive entity.
No,
in this county.
And our government, our county government, and its various aspects of it, are all the biggest employers in
right.
the county. And so none of them are doing anything that's financially productive. And they're not making anything. They're not generating revenues that goes into the economy. It's all covering their salaries or covering the fancy buildings that they have offices in. And so we need to have a county where there's some industry, where there's some, economic activity that is outside of government.
So, that's, well, when you think about the county government, the cities, all of the people in this county that are in healthcare, which that's at crisis levels. Yeah. We don't have enough of them, really.
Right.
All of this is other people's money.
Yes.
It's all being funded by government money.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, the primary private economic development in the county is PG&E, and they're even other people's money.
They're
quasi
pseudo government in a way.
Right.
Yeah.
The tourism and hospitality.
Right.
And there is no plan on the horizon to create new private sector economic development here.
No, our county is woefully behind on any kind of thoughtful economic development. They're starting to move in the right direction. We have a new county CEO, Matt Pontes, who has made some steps in that direction, but it could be many years before we see anything that's really adding to our economy.
And then in the meantime, while we're spending money on all of this, Dan Dow is scrapping for a lousy $850,000.
That is a sad story. Our county budget is $1.2 billion. It's a little over 1.02 on the paper, but then when you add in all the special services and everything else that county's also funding, it comes out to about $1.2 billion. And Dan Dow, for the last several years, has expressed a need to bring on a couple of staff people to the district attorney's office, one of them to prosecute all the additional crime that is now being covered under Prop 36. You know, for a long time, we gave shoplifters and drug dealers and various criminals sort of a free ride, and that was a big mistake that came out of a ballot measure several years ago. We passed Prop 36 3 years ago now, and the state has refused to fund it, but Dan Dow is still prosecuting those kinds of crimes that were covered under Prop 36, mm-hmm. only it's increased his workload considerably. So that's one thing. The other thing he's trying to bring on is someone who can go after fraud and elder abuse. And these are two things that are also growing tremendously in our community. Our community keeps growing older and older. And the elder abuse problem, and, you know, older people are more subject to fraud because they're not as savvy, particularly online, and they're more gullible, I guess. So anyhow, he wants to do something about it, and the majority of the Board of Supervisors won't give him the money.
Well, and then this is the last point on our government fiscal woes. Of course, Governor Newsom, I'll try to be kind, signed a historic balanced state budget that but it was with structural deficits.
He signed a fraudulent document. our legislative analyst's office is very clear that we are running a structural deficit of about $18 billion. And Newsom is kind of just sort of papering over it and pretending like it doesn't exist because he's trying to get through his term so that he can start his presidential run and not look bad. But we're in serious financial trouble by our state. And, you know, a lot of the state funds get passed down to the counties for programs.
Right.
Our county budget, that $1.2 billion budget, 39% of it comes from the state through as pass-throughs to do programs for things like homeless, mental health, and substance abuse, and that kind of stuff. And if we don't have that money, a lot of people are going to be in serious trouble.
So one of the things that, again, folks, I really encourage you to go to the CoLab website. That's colabslow.org and read Greg's weekly newsletter. I also encourage you to join CoLab.
Thank you, Barry. We very much appreciate it. We have one fundraiser a year, and then we have membership. And membership, we're a 501c6, so if you have a business, you can join as a business, and that's a write-off for the business. But we do need people to join.
Yeah.
But even if you're not in a position to join, check our website every week. We put up the new newsletter, and we're the only organization in the county that's putting out updates on what's happening on a county level, you know, issues that you need to know about. Slight commentary from time to time, but you know, usually just with a little sense of humor, a little sarcasm.
So one of the things is the last piece of county business that you covered in the last newsletter had to do with personnel matters, the county's civil service commission, and you've detected kind of a uptick in grievances.
Well,
I guess this would be the term, right?
Yeah, this last year there were 19 grievances filed by county employees, and that was up from 12 the previous year. And you know, there was very little detail given. They have to do an annual report on what they go through, but they didn't provide a lot of detail about what kind of grievances there were, if there was some commonality, if there was a trend. And the most frustrating part of it is that they just said that they had resolved most of these. There were three of them that were trending towards litigation, but the other 16 of them, they didn't tell how they were resolved. And I think it's in the public interest to know whether there were financial settlements or whether there was some kind of agreement made or how they resolved these grievances. But, you know, ultimately, those are, again, other people's money. Those are tax dollars that are being bandied around with employees, and we ought to know what's going on with our dollars.
So one last topic that I'd like you to unwrap a bit here, and well, this is going to be very important on the November ballot, is the slow cog tax increase, half-cent tax increase. I mean, you know, and we all know that infrastructure, and it goes back to the Bob Jones Trail, too, isn't that? The trail leads us back to the Bob Jones Trail. Infrastructure is the redheaded, in my opinion, is the redheaded stepchild in Slo County.
Well, I think you're right. I know that there are folks who have a theory that our County Board of Supervisors a few years ago, when it decided to deprioritize or you know, reduce its interest in transportation and infrastructure support, that they did so mindfully, thinking that if they backed off and didn't fund it, that at some point the public would be ready to increase taxes on itself to fund what they should be doing in their with our tax dollars. You would expect when you write a check to pay your taxes that you're going to get a level of service out of it, and basic roads and transportation would be included in that level of service.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Well, and then you ask the million-dollar question here, is how these funds can be used. But I hear the bumper music.
Yeah.
So we're going to return to this on the other side of the break.
Right.
And we'll talk about this and then move on to the Oceano Dunes. So, folks, stand by. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Legal troubles continue for Facebook and Instagram parent company Meta. Four states are suing, accusing the social media giant of getting children addicted. Fox's Connor Hanson.
The attorneys general of California, Colorado, Kentucky, and New Jersey are suing Meta, saying it designed its products to hook young users. They want a staggering $1.4 trillion sum.
Meta argues the penalties being sought are untethered from reality. A New York City skyscraper is in danger of collapsing in busy midtown Manhattan. Mayor Zohran Mamdani says columns are buckled, floors are sagging.
The building remains unstable. Since arriving on scene, we have witnessed additional movement in one of the compromised columns.
At 38. Story structure was being renovated. Nearby buildings have been evacuated. America's listening to Fox News.
Bahama Bay Tanning Company has you covered to be summer ready. Not only do they provide a tanning experience with packages to fit your needs and budget, they also offer tanning beds, spray tans, infrared pod, teeth whitening, clothing, swimwear, jewelry, and more. Locally owned and operated, Bahama Bay Tanning Company. Call 239-9800 or visit them at 1485 Creston Road in the Food for Less Shopping Center.
Wow. Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, Executive Director of the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business, commonly known as CoLab. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So just a couple of last things here on this slow cog tax initiative, because we're going to be talking a lot about this between now and the November election.
It deserves it.
But, you know, the funds, of course, they've got a laundry list of how the funds can be used. And within the list are bicycle and pedestrian improvements, so more Bob Jones trails, which we need like another, right, you know, hole in the head, and transit services, including local trolley services, may be funded if desired by a city. So just real quickly, how is this, assuming that this passes, which hopefully it won't, okay, how is this money apportioned, and you know, how is that all going to work?
Well, it's apportioned. There's a regional breakout of it's anticipated, by the way, to raise about $35 million a year, and it will be distributed around the county, pretty much by supervisorial district, and then there's another apportion for cities. And then it's a 1% set aside for administration and 4% set aside for transit services for disabled people and seniors and that kind of thing. So, and then there are some guardrails about what it can and can't be used for, but you're right, it will include certain transit projects, it'll include safe pathways to schools and some trail stuff. Some of that is mentioned because there's a lot of grant money in that particular category, and this is what the sales tax is ultimately designed to do, is qualify our county to be eligible for this big picture state grant funding, because we become what they call a self-help
county. Right.
So in order to get some of our tax dollars back that we pay in our gasoline taxes and other kinds of taxes, we have to tax ourselves some more, which is a little ironic in my book. Anyhow, there are some good safeguards that are built into this thing. One of them is that any of the cities that are beneficiaries can't cut back their existing transportation funding and replace it with the money that they're going to get from this. So,
okay.
So that's, I think, an important one. I do give SLOCOG credit for having gone around the county and really talked to a lot of people. They did these listening sessions and information sessions and so forth. And I think that they designed a measure that's probably as good as you could hope to get. What I would criticize them with is that it raises the level of sales tax that we can be paying in the county to become, in some cases, the highest sales tax county in the state. And, we're just in an economy where these kinds of things hurt.
Yeah, and so this is, and everybody in the county is going to pay this tax.
Yes,
it's really going to raise it. It's will any of this money be available to unincorporated?
Yes,
areas.
A good portion of it will be available to unincorporated, and that's an important thing. You know, the unincorporated is where the county board of supervisors have their greatest responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and the unincorporated roads in our county are the ones that are getting worse than ever.
I know.
I live in Atascadero. We have a half-cent sales tax already for transportation and road projects in Atascadero, and they're doing a pretty good job of fixing a lot of our roads. But and I think some other cities are in the same boat. But the county roads, boy, they're rough.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yes, they are. Okay, let's shift gears here to, again, another... I mean, I guess the good news about our never-ending stories in Slo County is it gives me plenty of cannon fodder for the show. But
it's boring after a while, though.
Yeah, I'd like some new ones, I guess. Oceano Dunes. I mean, I thought we were... And the snowy plover, a cute little bird.
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on now with this.
Well, we have a new lawsuit that has been filed. It's coming from an organization called the Center for Biological Diversity. They are out of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona. They are famous for having, or infamous for, filing suits all over the country. You pick an ecological issue that they think they can raise some money off of, and they will file suit. And, you know, speaking of money, we should look at their total revenue. This is 2024 figures, but their total revenue for 2024 was $45,735,714. And their total assets, their cost of doing business was $34 million and gave them a net profit of a little over $11 million annually, with total net assets of $54,800,000. So, you know, they're big business when it comes to the lawsuit side of things, and a lot of people donate to them. You go to their website, and they have, it's like a smorgasbord. You know, what kind of lawsuit would you like to be involved with? And you can just scroll down and pick one, and donate to that cause. And anyhow, it's pretty clear that all they really want to do is tie things up, make things complicated, and maybe in the long run, look for a settlement.
We got a caller. Whoa, if I could reach it. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your comment or question?
I was going to add on to that, POLAB, that's the wrong thing. They're a great organization. This BS tax thing that they want to put through, Barry. The thing that's the worst part about the tax is, yeah, we can get some of our money back from the state. That's all fine and dandy. But they're going to try and commingle those funds and save them up so they can do big projects like an overpass or whatever they're going to do, a roundabout on 46 or this, that, and the other. So your local communities, you know, if you're a Tascadero, you might wait 8 to 12 years to be able to expand an overpass because all the money went to Paso or all the money went to Pismo. So it's not a good idea. And, of course, our Board of Supervisors changed the priorities of the county to not fund roads. So this is their ploy to get us, the taxpayer, to fund them again.
Yep.
You're right on target with that. You know, what they did was they moved all the money that they should be spending on transportation into other things like homeless programs and other stuff. You may approve of that or you may not. But you're also right. Some of these projects are going to take years and years to finish. And, you know, we'll be paying taxes for a long time before we see benefits from some of those things. But it is broken up regionally. So, you know, Bruce Gibson can't, you know, Bigfoot himself in and take all the money for a project in Cayucas.
Yep. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Somewhat true and somewhat not true. But, you know, you can do North County, if you will. So all the Atascadero money for 4 or 5 years goes to Paso Robles, and then Atascadero might get one thing or out of Paso, and Templeton might get something. And the way they're trying to sell this is your local area will get funds back. And I don't know all the other jurisdictions, but I know Atascadero quite well. And Atascadero would see about $2 million a year out of that fund without matching or whatever, just in part of that tax revenue.
Out of the 35 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're trying to say, well, you get money for your local stuff too, and that's trying their how they sell it. And, you know, we already did that. We passed a measure and renewed it again to Tascadero because we can manage our funds, unlike the county. I mean, right. You know, you get into the county managing funds, and it's a scary thing.
It's an oxymoron. You know,
yeah, they do.
Last thing I'll mention on that, on the scary part of the county, you know, let's face it. I don't think Santa Barbara County is running a deficit, and their budget, I think, is only $600,000 more than our budget, and we're in a deficit. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Jeff, thanks for calling in. All right?
You got it.
Have a great one. All right. You know, I just want to wrap this story up on the Oceano Dunes. And again, you know, what struck me about this Center for Biological Diversity is it struck me that this is the Southern Poverty Law Center of environmental scams.
Yeah. It just reeks of abuse. And it's just going to drag out more and more lawsuits. All the lawyers get rich off of it. We're all sitting there wondering if, you know, the dunes are going to be open next month or not. All those businesses that rely so much on the customers coming to the dunes. They're wondering if they're going to be around in a year.
Right.
You know, it's just crazy. Why don't we just get it resolved, put it behind us, and finish with the lawsuits?
Yep. The other thing that the co-litigant is the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, which is not necessarily the Chumash Indians.
I guess, you know, this whole tribal thing is very dicey when you start looking at who claims what and who's got the heritage and who, you know, they're not quite sure about. And there's some big business involved for some of those tribes that have casinos and that kind of stuff. And it's very hard to keep track of who's who, but the Northern Tribe Council is involved with this suit, and they're claiming that the beach is part of their
tribal homeland.
Yeah. And so they want to protect that beach, I guess.
So watch, how much is this going to cost the county to defend?
Well, it's not the county, it's the state.
It's the state.
Yeah, the state parks. They run the organization. And the state parks have biologists on staff, and they're working very hard to try to protect the snowy plover. And they've closed out areas of the dunes to protect them. This whole case revolves around one or two dead plovers that they found that may have, you know, come in contact with somebody riding an off-road vehicle.
So one of the things that I want to touch on here before we move on to a couple of other topics is, again, it's going back to nuclear power, nuclear energy. The Diablo Canyon situation is still hanging out there, and it's critical, mission critical at this point.
I'm very worried about it. The thing that's hanging everything up now for a 20-year extension is getting a bill out of the legislature granting the permit for a 20-year operation. And there is no bill yet. The legislature's moving along. They're going to be adjourned in October, and they're going on break most of August. And so the closer we get to the bill deadlines, the more expensive it gets to get a bill. You can't get a bill passed. You couldn't get a bill passed in the legislature to cure cancer if you didn't have something to offer up. You have to pay to play in Sacramento. And so they're going to extort PG&E like the Coastal Commission did for all those lands that they got set aside for hiking and so forth. Those all came at the expense of ratepayers. Now the legislature, Bruce Gibson, Don Addis, and John Laird are looking at figuring out ways to see how they can extort PG&E for more.
That's why I was just going to use the word. It's an extortion game.
Yeah, and so. They're going to be, they're now talking, this three people I just mentioned, you know, when the Coastal Commission was granting their permit, those people had no problem with granting a permit as long as they got the land set aside. Now they've got the land set aside. Now they're suddenly saying, well, there's all these unanswered questions, and they're very worried, and they should, you know, slow down and take a better look at what's going on. Well, wait a minute. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has looked at every tiny little aspect of the operations there, and they've given a green light. The Coastal Commission has given it a green light. The Water Quality Board has given it a green light. What on earth could those three characters have in terms of questions that should delay us from getting our plant renewed for 20 years?
Yeah, it would. We talked about it during the, you know, when you first came in. I'd love to get somebody from PG&E, and you know, but again, I'm sure they're walking a fine line on what they want to say.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, in my book, the anti-nuke people, it's a religion. And, you know, it was born out of the 60s and 70s, Jackson Brown and his whole crew. But when you look at the demographics of the polling about who supports and who opposes nuclear energy, almost all the opposition comes from people 60, 70, 80 years old. Younger generations see that this is, you know, the answer, really, and they're entirely open to it. But our legislature is made up of a lot of old folks, and I'm saying that because I'm an old guy too. But, and so they're practicing their religion. They're not looking at science. They're not looking at the data. They're just, you know, they've got these built-in biases, this knee-jerk reaction, nuclear is bad, so vote no. And so we've got to overcome that. We've got to get a bill through the legislature. And at some point, there's going to be a point of no return for you know, Diablo is continuing to go through its decommissioning right now. It has to by law. And at some point, it's going to be so far along in its decommissioning that it won't make economic sense to go the other way.
Well, and don't all the other assembly people and senators understand that this is 10% of our state's baseload power and that it's going to affect everybody in California?
Not those that are religious about anti-nuke.
Yeah.
They believe that they have faith, and their faith is that all these solar fields are going to suddenly come online and we're going to be kumbaya.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. The other ongoing story here is, of course, Praga.
Yeah.
And I did speak to Greg briefly last week, and apparently, I mean, I guess the issues are that Praga didn't get its funding, so now, you know, there's some sort of loan somehow, some way in the picture for them, but it's not there yet.
Praga is the Paso Robles Area Groundwater Authority. Oh. I always like to explain these acronyms. Oh, go ahead.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters.
Hey, I just wanted to second your guest's comments on the anti-nuclear movement.
Mm-hmm.
It actually came out of the anti-war movement. Problem was, the war ended, and they had nothing to do.
Yeah.
So Mothers for Peace were an anti-Vietnam War group. Then the Vietnam War ends, they've got nothing to do.
Yeah.
And their initial advertisements, you know, would show a mushroom cloud over a Diablo Canyon. They actually said it can go off like a bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right on track with that. And it's amazing. Every time the issue comes up at the Board of Supervisors, we get this whole league of these gray ladies that, they're a bunch of grandmas, and they come in wringing their hands and worried about how the world's going to come to an end if we let Diablo Canyon stay online.
It's none of the, I spent a lot of time talking to James Walker, the first guest last week, and, you know, so much of the stuff that we've been fed for decades about nuclear power is just, you know, false propaganda, really, and it's a shame, really, because it's a great power source. Thanks for calling.
All right.
Anyway, back to the groundwater situation. Yeah. I guess the good news is that the quiet title thing is coming to an end, hopefully.
Well, I like your term, hopefully. I mean, the quiet title lawsuits were supposed to come to an end years ago, mm-hmm. and they keep getting extended, and so they're theoretically going to finish up this fall, but I don't know yet exactly what that'll mean for Praga. We're waiting to see. You have a caller.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters.
Hey, I am informed that Denmark is going all nuclear.
Well, isn't that well, you know?
And here we are fighting over one plant that's the last one left, and they want to put all those frickin' windmills that are maintenance heavy and don't last and everything off in the ocean and kill all our fish and what.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, nothing in the States does make sense. Thanks for your call.
Did you say frickin' on the...
No. Oh, did he say frickin'? I didn't push the button, fat. You know, the
you weren't a good enough sensor.
I know. I don't know which button it is on the panel. Yeah, so
just real quickly, fortunately, I think the offshore wind energy industry is... stalled out right now for California, mm-hmm. but no one ever put any kind of a cost to that whole concept. And, you know, anybody who knows anything about engineering, about, you know, all the aspects involved, knew that was going to cost gazillions of dollars, and no one wanted to own up to the cost.
Well, you know, real quickly on the Paso Robles, because I'm gonna get music here in 15 seconds. Are the fallowing programs moving along?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And do we have any numbers on that yet?
Well, we're starting to get numbers. We'll have more numbers probably by the end of the month.
Okay.
But that will make a difference to the groundwater sustainability.
Good. All right. Well, hopefully, I'm sure Greg will have more for us in the coming month or so on what's happening. So, folks, stand by. We'll finish up with Greg Haskin of CoLab.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Maria Bartiromo, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending lower, pressured by a sell-off in semiconductor stocks on mounting doubts about the sustainability of the AI-driven rally. Chip stocks tumbled despite memory chip giant Samsung Electronics reporting a 19-fold jump in second quarter operating profit due to surging demand for artificial intelligence. However, concerns about its AI spending plans and future demand spooked investors, leading to a sell-off in chips. Tech and industrials were the worst performing sectors. Rising oil prices are fueling inflation concerns, with West Texas Intermediate crude settling near $72 a barrel. The Dow winners, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow falling 131 points. The Nasdaq lower by 302. S&P 500 down 34. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term. Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
We're here to help. At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I'm still looking for a guest for the first 30 minutes next week. I have some ideas on how that's going to go, and I might come up with maybe a retrospective on the past 6 months here this year. We've got plenty of things to talk about for 30 minutes if we don't get a guest. And then I have Danny Morgan, who is the entrepreneur. He's a serial entrepreneur, but he owns Paso Tile and Stone. And he's going to talk about his life as a serial entrepreneur and how he's really he's a great guy. He's really a Horatio Alger kind of guy. And he's also got some interesting projects outside the United States that he's working on that he wants to chat about. So that'll be a fast-paced and interesting segment. Real quickly, Greg, any final comments? Any comments on the final vote count here in the county?
I think that a lot of people were expecting them to be a little different, but it was a good campaign. We had some great candidates that ran good campaigns to, you know, some of them won, some of them didn't. I guess it depends on your own personal choice. But I think the saddest story out of the whole election was that there were 3,313 voters who cast their ballot, but their ballots didn't get counted. And there were a variety of reasons for that, but most of them had to do with postmarks and people that posted their ballots too late, or they posted them in a place that the ballot first had to go down to Santa Barbara and get canceled by the post office, and then sent back to San Luis Obispo to the county clerk's office, and they got there too late. And so 3,313 people who took the time to vote didn't. That was countywide. And that just sort of goes to show how broken this crazy system is of, you know, any time within a month of the election, you can cast your ballot and all that stuff. What is wrong with just saying we have an election day program, you go in and cast your ballot? And, you know, if you have serious reasons that you can't make it to the polling place, there's always an accommodation. But this is crazy, the system that we've got. Yep. And it opens it up to all kinds of questions about fraud. It opens up about people like the 3,313 that I just mentioned that didn't get their vote counted at all. I mean, how discouraging is that, to think that you took the time to cast your ballot, you had something to express when you made your vote, and it didn't matter, didn't mm-hmm. get counted. Why not instead go back to the system that works well? And by the way, the big benefit to having an election day program is that at the day after the election, we know who won, because they can count the ballots right then and there. There's none of this, you know, boxes of ballots showing up out of a closet somewhere and somebody, you know, happening to win by 13 votes after this new box of ballots was counted. You know, none of that kind of shenanigans. An election day should be an election day, not an election month.
Yep. Well, and it's very clear. And, you know, I've had to talk to a number of guests here since mm-hmm. the election, on and off air, and it's clear that the system was created by Democrats for Democrats to win, and we're not seeing bugs in the system, we're seeing features.
Yeah. And, you know, this whole concept of ballot harvesting, that's pretty stinky too.
Yeah.
You know, some stranger shows up at your door and asks you to cast your ballot and give it to them, and they'll turn it in for you. How do you know if they're going to really turn it in or not?
Yep.
How do you know if they're from an opposite party than what you are, and they're grabbing your ballot just to trash can it so that your ballot doesn't get counted? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and yeah, maybe it's somebody you know and trust, but even then, why can't you just cast your own ballot? Why should somebody have to facilitate you vote making your choice?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Okay, real quickly, we got about 2 minutes left. Obviously, the governor's race, we'll cover that another time. I mean, it's too early to tell what's going to happen with that one, I think.
Let's just hope for indictments.
Well, yeah, we were going to talk about that. You know, let's talk about that story.
Well, very, very briefly,
yeah.
As it turns out, there's been some pretty dirty deeds going on in the governor's office for quite a while.
Yeah.
His former chief of staff was convicted of fraud and malevolence and is waiting sentencing. One of his close allies wore a wire, and it's looking like there may be a lot of more indictments coming down the road because of the evidence that they gathered with this person on the inner circle wearing a wire. And a lot of it focuses around Jennifer Siebel, Newsom's wife, who ran a nonprofit, or does run a nonprofit, that the governor helped her raise money from.
That's looking kind of like a Clinton Foundation game.
It's just awful. It is just awful. You know, anybody who wants to cotton in favor with the governor, well, they write a check to his wife's foundation, and suddenly they're in.
Yeah.
And she's made millions and millions of dollars doing this. And she produces these cheesy little videos that get shown in schools, and a lot of them are pretty controversial on their own.
Yeah, it's all about gay stuff.
But the nice thing is, and nice in my book, I don't know about others, is that it's starting to drag in Javier Becerra.
Yes.
Because it was one of his campaign accounts that facilitated all this problem.
Well, I hear the bumper music, so we'll talk about ballot propositions the next time you come online.
I look forward to it, Barry. Thank you.
And thanks so much for coming in, Greg. Colab, C-O-L-A-B, slow.org. Read Greg's weekly newsletter and also join. It's a great organization.
Appreciate it, Barry.
And folks, we'll be back next week with some great guests, more topics. I left some on the outline. I could repurpose them for next week. Take care. Have a great week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.